This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Coming up at 1:30. Should motorcycle riders be allowed to ride without helmets? That's making its way through Olympia. I'll talk to the bill sponsor for that. As we get into the Fast 50, I'm feeling very nostalgic right now.
Why?
Feeling wistful and sad and nostalgic.
What happened?
Well, the top story on CBS News, if people were listening, one of the all-time greats in Major League Baseball, Frank Robinson, dead at the age of 83. And I feel like I just told the story a few weeks ago.
But it's certainly worthy of telling again.
But I will tell it again because I don't remember what I said a few weeks ago. But when I was, I was in kind of a weird situation as a kid because being 3 years younger than my classmates, I had some friends that I played sports with who were the same age, and I had some friends who I went to school with who were 3 years older. Mm-hmm. But that's weird when you're 8, 9 years old to have friends 3 years older from school.
Right, because you don't look the part, but yet your mind's at the point where...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have, really close tie. I did in the summertime when I was playing Little League baseball, and my Little League buddies who were all the same age and I, we'd do a lot of stuff. But when I was 8 or 9, that was the ages when I just, I was okay, but I didn't have a lot of friends. So I saw one day, the Seattle Pilots had left Seattle in the spring of 1970. And I saw an ad in the back of a magazine for this baseball dice game, Sports Illustrated Baseball, where you're the manager. And it was for the 1971 season. So I was 9 years old, and it was $9.99.
That's big bucks.
Yeah. And my mom didn't have 10 bucks. But she made me a deal. She said, if you can earn $5, I'll come up with $5. So I was like literally picking up pennies on the ground when I would see them.
You've just been such a scrapper. I mean, you're always like...
I was going door to door, doing chores. I'll rake your leaves. I'll sweep your sidewalk for 25 cents. I was mowing yards. I would do anything. And it took me about 2 weeks, but I made $5. And I don't know how Mom came up with the other $5, but I sent away for this baseball dice game. And the Baltimore Orioles in 1971, it was the 1971 season, they made it to the World Series. They lost to Pittsburgh Pirates. But that was my team after the Seattle Pilots left town. And so I played their entire 162-game schedule, and Frank Robinson was my cleanup hitter. You had Don Buford batting leadoff, Paul Blair, center field second, Boog Powell first base, batting third, Frank Robinson, and then my all-time hero, Brooks Robinson, third base, batting fifth, and on it goes. And so Frank Robinson was he was the star of my team. And then, after that, he became the first black manager in baseball history with the Cleveland Indians.
Only player to win MVP in both leagues?
Yes. Yeah, won it with Cincinnati Reds and then with the Baltimore Orioles. 586 home runs, came up just shy of 3,000 hits. But I just find more and more that these guys, because you have to understand, I sat, Ursula, I'd listen to either KJR or KOL, or the other, I think King 1090 was a top 40 station. I would sit on summer nights rolling these dice, managing 3, 4, 5 games a night till 2 or 3 in the morning when I was 9 years old, and listening to music, playing my baseball game. That was my life back then in the summertime.
I just love it. I mean, how you would keep yourself busy.
I'd keep copious statistics.
Yes. And the fact that you remember all these names as if it were just yesterday.
I know the whole 25-man roster because I managed them for an entire season. And I think I did it 2 or 3 times. So
Yeah.
When I hear that Frank Robinson has passed, that is such a huge part of my childhood. Yeah. And it makes me sad.
I get it.
And I tell you what, when Brooks Robinson goes, I'll probably, because he hasn't been returning your calls, Nicole, right?
Right. I've gotten pretty close, and he just doesn't return it.
I know he was diagnosed with cancer a few years ago, and I don't know where that stands, because I can't find any news about him. But I'll cry on the air whenever he goes, because
you're getting a little emotional even just thinking of it.
Oh, because I always wore number 5. If you looked at my middle school yearbook, everybody called me Brooks. Because everybody knew, every time I sneezed, I would say Brooks Arms right after sneezing instead of God bless.
Why is that?
I don't know. Yeah, I would always follow a sneeze with that.
Aww.
That was a weird little, yeah, let's face it. So, and then I think I've mentioned before, I couldn't find that baseball game disappeared from my mom's house. And I didn't take it with me when I moved out. And so about 10 years ago, I'm on eBay. And there's a mint condition 1971 season Sports Illustrated baseball game. And I got in a bidding war with one other guy.
Like, who else is going to want that?
I have no idea. But I ended up paying $183 for this game.
No.
And then I got, the day it arrived, I opened it up. I played one game, put it back together, and it's been sitting on top of my desk in my office at home. And
it's not meant to be played. It's just meant to give you joy when you look at it.
I just like looking up at it and having that memory. So,
Frank Robinson died after a long battle with bone cancer.
Yes, and he'd been in hospice care. So here is from that 1971 season where Earl Weaver and I managed the Orioles to the World Series.
Asked as the starting pitcher. And making the newspapers and radio. There's a high drive in the deep left, way up. That one is going, and it is gone. A home run for Frank Robinson.
Yeah. All right, touch them all, Frank. So Frank Robinson at the age of 83. Next up in the Fastest 15. I mean, what a horrible, horrible story. The shooting in North Seattle is by Northgate today. So as I understand, I don't know if you've heard an update, but the cops were called. They could not figure out what the call was.
Yeah, because, it was a domestic violence call.
Yeah, but at first they had no idea. They couldn't get an address. They couldn't get what was going on because of some language issues. And then they called back the number. They were able to track where it was. They show up. A woman is stabbed to death in the doorway of an apartment when they got there. And then a man with a knife, and police had to open fire and shoot and kill the guy, it sounds like.
Yes, and there were two other adults there and also two children hiding in a room nearby.
Yeah, I saw a video. I think it was John Hopperstad at Q13. He was on Twitter, and he had video of the cop. And the little, I couldn't tell if it was a boy or girl because he was a little ways away. But they're carrying on this frigid night, it's, you know, 5, 6 a.m., and they're carrying this little child who looks to be about 3 years old and putting him or her in the back of the cruiser. And it's the idea of these two cowering, hiding while this murder's taking place.
It happened a little before 4 this morning.
It was right in the... SPD Deputy Chief Mark Garth Green was on the scene.
We received a 911 phone call with some noise, other people yelling. It came out as a domestic disturbance. We had a language barrier issue that our dispatchers were working through. Fortunately, we were able to get a translator, replay the tapes, locate the address in the apartment building here at 105 Midvale apartment building here. Officers responded to the scene. Located the apartment, made entry into the apartment, found a deceased, obviously deceased woman as they made entry into the apartment. Continued into the apartment where they were located two children and two adults in a different room hiding. As they were getting them safely, they encountered a suspect who was armed with a knife. Two officers opened fire on the suspect. They were able to then extract the occupants of the apartment, the children and the two adults. The suspect in question that they opened fire on is deceased at this time.
Yeah, yeah, those little kids was the part of the story that just rips your heart apart. So, very sad situation in the Northgate neighborhood today. Next up in the Fastest 15, the problem with people who think they can change the world is sometimes the way we've been doing things is working okay. And your vision of how it should be just doesn't actually work in practice. Look, I have a ton of admiration for Bill and Melinda Gates and how much they spend philanthropically, and they seem to demand results when they spend their money. I appreciate private sector charity much more than government posing as philanthropists, because all that yields is bureaucracy. But anyway, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they announced a few years ago, back in 2015, that they were going to offer something that no other employer has ever offered. 52 weeks of fully paid leave to new moms and dads. So you could spend a year paid with your new babies. Turns out, that was too much of a good thing. They're ending the one-year paid parental leave policy. Now, they're still going to give 6 months, which is incredibly generous. But they said a year away caused disruptions in the daily operations and execution of the organization's mission, and that they just couldn't afford to do that because it was too disruptive.
Noble effort, though. I love
totally
the idea.
Totally disagree.
I love the idea, you know, and especially since they did it on their own and they want to see, hey, if we, there are many other countries that have much longer parental leaves, and let's face
not
it.
Not a year.
Yeah, a year is a lot.
Yeah, nobody
I would imagine
has a
year. That anyone who has, now if I was given the option, I think I would take it.
A year paid?
If I was given the option?
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah.
Oh.
You'd go crazy.
Well,
Why wouldn't you take it? If you were guaranteed your job at the end of that?
Because I'm a competitor, and I wouldn't walk away from this show. If I was doing this show when King 5 gave me the 6 weeks, which was unbelievably generous. I had to take 2 weeks vacation, and they matched it with 4 paid weeks when the Bullets owned King 5. But if I was doing this show and had that option, there's no way I would take 6 weeks off.
Our listeners would hate that. However, your family would love it.
They wouldn't. They wouldn't care.
Maybe my family would love it.
They would. Nobody remembers anything from the first year of life.
There's so much that happens, and there's so much. And because Bill and Melinda Gates, you know, the Gates Foundation has done a lot about early child development. I mean, that's a big thing for Melinda Gates and mm-hmm. all the things that you nurture in that first few years.
You know what's better for your kids than taking a year off to be with them? Setting an example of work ethic.
Oh, that doesn't, that one doesn't preclude the other.
Yes, it does.
Oh, no way.
If you have an option of taking a year off and you say, you know what, I'll take 2 weeks, I'll take a month off, but I'm not going to. And also, then your coworkers, your childless coworkers, have to pick up the burden for you.
Or they hire someone temporarily.
But that's not workable for it. And that's what they're admitting.
I can see where that wouldn't work and it would be disruptive. Yeah. But I say noble effort.
Let's give our kids, and I know this is an unbelievably, since Ocasio-Cortez and Jay Inslee rolled out their Green New Deal. Did you hear that one element I talked about before the top of the hour?
No.
In the Green New Deal that Ocasio-Cortez, I got to find it here, says Jay Inslee has signed on to, I read this right before the top of the hour, they will guarantee economic security for all who are unable or unwilling to work. Unwilling? Yes. That's the direction our socialists are heading in our government. We'll give, if you're unwilling to work, if you just don't feel like it, We will give you a good, solid amount of money to live on. And I'm just saying, I'm going to continue until my dying breath to buck the socialist tide. I'm going to try to hold the ocean back with my little broom. And I'm going to suggest maybe we're doing our kids more of a favor if we show them a good, strong work ethic other than sitting around playing video games while they're sitting in their car seat on the floor.
Absolutely agree. But at 1 year with your newborn, I don't think that's a bad thing. And I don't think that keeps you from showing that you have great work ethic. Just make up for it.
Yeah. You know how long it would take to rebuild ratings?
Yes.
Once you're gone
but
for a year?
Not everybody's worried about that.
Everybody goes away.
I will tell you, with our first child, I had 5.5 months. That went fast.
Yeah, I think it's a more noble thing for moms. I think it's more important for moms. For dads?
I also think that we work in a very specific business where that doesn't work, just as it doesn't work to call in for snow days, stuff like that. But everybody else, it works.
All that is your fastest 15.
This has been the fastest 15 minutes in the news. Fast. Dory's fastest 15.
Should we get rid of the law that requires motorcycle helmets in our state? I'll talk to the guy behind that next. What's going on down in Olympia these days? We've talked about a lot of the bills involving homelessness, about trying to prevent the spread of tolling in our state. There's another one that has a lot of passion. Motorcycle riders, you know, they like to be free. But we have a helmet law here in our state. And Senator Tim Sheldon has introduced a bill that would give motorcycle riders the freedom to ride without a helmet, and also lane splitting. Senator Tim Sheldon joins us here on Cairo Radio. Senator, always good to talk to you.
Hi, Dory. Great to be here.
Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say, on the helmet bill, I'm not the prime sponsor. That's Senator Rolfes, but I did sign on as a co-sponsor.
Okay.
And I think there's about 23 states where you can ride without a helmet. And the bill is really, like you say, it's about freedom. It's freedom of choice. If you have insurance and you're out there on the highway, I think many riders tell me that actually it's a safer ride without that helmet because you can see things more clearly. And I think it's just a choice issue. If
it is a choice.
And,
I'd never get on a motorcycle or a bicycle without a helmet, but that's my choice as well. So here's one of the big sticking points, because from a purely libertarian standpoint, I know that this bill says you would have to have insurance. What if somebody who's uninsured is riding without a helmet, gets in a crash, and then ends up at Harborview, and now we have to pay, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars as taxpayers because they didn't have insurance? What happens then?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the bill says the bill says you do have to have insurance. And of course, there's some people that will ride without it. I think that's going to be a smaller number, certainly, than people that do have insurance, much smaller number. So I don't know. You always have that risk. You have that risk with somebody driving an automobile. Somebody without insurance can easily drive automobiles, but I think the number would be pretty small.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And what kind of response are you getting on this? What's the opposition to giving people that personal choice?
The State Patrol, the Washington Safety Commission as well, testified against the bill. So you've got those organizations that feel that everyone should be in the same, you know, same category. The statistics, I think, are interesting. You've got statistics from people, groups that say this is unsafe. You got statistics saying it's even safer. And you have Sheriff Snaza here in Thurston County, who was in an accident in Montana where helmets are not required, and he was seriously injured but did survive.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd like to see everybody wear helmets. But certainly that's a personal, again, an anecdotal personal experience. But Montana seems to survived. There's still a great state over there without helmets. So it's possible. It's possible here.
Yeah, okay. And then the other bill, it would allow lane splitting, and that's something we see a lot in California. They allow that. And that is if traffic is slowed down, motorcycles can just go right between the cars that are moving slowly or even, you know, completely stop.
Right.
Our bill, this one, is a little different from California. You would only allow them to ride on the left side of the far left lane. Is that right?
Yes. Well, I call it a lane sharing. So there is a little controversy between it inside the motorcycle community about should you be able to ride between the lanes or on the left shoulder. But I think that a couple of things are obvious here. Motorcycles are air cooled, so in traffic you need to keep moving to keep your machine functioning well.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when traffic is stopped, it's very easy for an individual to be rear-ended, and that's very dangerous to the motorcycle rider and, of course, the driver. But the bill passed the Senate a couple years ago. I did have enough votes for it, and I'm hoping we can do that again. But It gets people through traffic. And, you know, I think drivers sometimes feel, well, geez, on a motorcycle, he's passing me on the left-hand shoulder here. He can't go more than 10 miles faster than the traffic.
Right.
Or, so does he have some advantage or is he special? Well, on 405, DOT has opened up the shoulder for buses.
Right
now.
Yeah. No, look, if that would get more people on motorcycles, then that helps our overall traffic. But why not do it like in California? Let them split between all the lanes. Why just restrict it to the left shoulder?
Because in California, it is legal, but dangerous. I think it's certainly more dangerous to go between that traffic. Somebody could, you know, open a door, hit a mirror, that kind of thing. Also, the patrol doesn't like it because if somebody's speeding between lanes, there's no way you're going to catch them with a patrol car.
Right.
I think that the compromise here is to go on the shoulder. Some motorcyclists say, well, there's debris on the shoulder, but sure, there's some debris, but you're not traveling fast. You're not going 50 miles an hour, even 40 miles an hour. You're not even going, you're going at most 25 miles an hour. And you going slow, you're going to see debris and certainly steer around it. So
here's what is a major factor to me, because I like this bill. I think anything that would get more cars off the road and more people onto motorcycles, I think that's great. But our drivers around here, Senator, are so passive aggressive. And when I was in Italy a couple of summers ago, my wife and I rented a scooter, a Vespa. And there, if cars are stopped at a red light, you can ride in the oncoming lane of traffic to get in front of all of those cars. And then you're first off when the light turns green. Pretty much anything goes, which I love. And all the drivers are fine with it. But here in Washington, we have so many passive-aggressive wimps out there whose heads explode if they see a motorcycle or a scooter passing them. I'm wondering if our drivers have the mentality to be able to handle that, because other countries are just completely cool with that.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think there is an issue here that people have a. I won't say so certain words, but towards people on motorcycles. But you know what? Those guys and gals are really exercising a great service for us because they reduce congestion.
Yeah.
They get on the left-hand side, go around people, and let's get everybody moving a lot better. So I think people will probably feel uncomfortable with it at first, but we've got to do some changing here. I mean, it's 700,000 more people in the Puget Sound area in the last 10 years, and they're clogging the highways.
You know what I got to get you behind? One of the best ideas I've ever come up with And that's saying something because I come up with brilliant ideas on a daily basis. But one of the best ones, and I need somebody in Olympia to get behind this. Like we have the Burke-Gilman trip.
We've had a hearing in the Senate Transportation Committee.
Oh, you haven't heard my idea yet. I got to tell you my idea. So, you know how we have the Burke-Gilman Trail, which is a beautiful jewel for bicyclists? We need something similar on the west side going from Everett down to Seattle. We've got that stupid Sounder train line. We need a trail, and we would restrict it to scooters, not motorcycles, but scooters like are so prevalent in Europe, and you get them removed from cars, and you would get tens of thousands of cars off the road if we had a dedicated throughway for scooters along the Sound. That would do more for traffic than the $100 billion we're spending on other
stuff.
Let's do it. What do you say?
You could have ATVs on that as well that are fitted with blinkers and turn signals, and you can do that in the rural areas. We have a law that allows that on city streets now.
So what do you say, Senator? You and I partner up on this, and we will change the region. We'll put our stamp on things here.
Right, and we'll get some more passenger ferries out there. You know, years ago we had steamers going from Tacoma to Seattle.
Sure.
Getting there sooner than you could driving, and I think you could today with a passenger ferry from Tacoma to Seattle or Olympia to Seattle.
Okay, all right.
We're spending mega millions on the Coleman Dock. Let's return it to something like we had with the Mosquito Fleet. Let's get some private ferries coming back and forth.
Yeah, as long as it's private, I'm all for that. Okay, all right, well, I'm going to follow with interest the motorcycle helmet, the lane splitting, and then next year...
Lane sharing, Dory.
Sharing is caring. Sharing is caring. I agree with you.
Lane sharing.
Okay.
They won't be running between the...
No splitting.
Between the lanes.
Okay, got it.
And then
next year, we're going to really fix things with my scooter Burke-Gilman-type pathway idea.
I like it.
Okay, all right. Senator, always good talk with you. Appreciate you coming on with me today.
Thanks, Dory.
Okay.
Good talking to you.
Senator Tim Sheldon joining us. Love to hear your thoughts. You like the no helmets? Do you like the lane sharing for motorcycles on the left shoulder? I say why not to both? I'm all for it. Send me a text, 98973. That's the Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. We have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. When Governor Inslee unveiled his budget proposal last month, one of the things he said that shocked a lot of us was that he wanted to spend $1.1 billion to save the whales in Puget Sound, and he said part of that would include this.
And by the way, I am also proposing a temporary suspension of whale watching of our southern resident orcas. It's the right thing to do, I believe.
Our Nicole Jennings, who posts all our stuff on My Northwest. Man, you did an in-depth story on this. You talked to the environmentalists. You talked to the whale watching groups. You have a great piece that's going up on MyNorthwest.com.
Thanks, Dory. And it's in two pieces. The first piece kind of focuses on the environmental arguments. The second piece is kind of the whale watchers' response to that. And they'll be up Thursday and Friday this week.
Okay, so whale watching's a big industry around here. And For people who love whales, some of their love, it's kind of the argument about SeaWorld, where a lot of us can't stand that whales are in captivity, but a lot of people come to love the whales because they see them there. And I imagine the whale watching is kind of the same thing, that people go out, they love the whales, and that's why so many people feel such a strong connection to them.
Absolutely. And even the conservationists, there's no doubt among anyone's minds that the people who are going out on whale watching tours are the people who love the orcas the most. Otherwise, you wouldn't spend all that money and time to go out and watch them.
So when Jay Inslee said he's going to ban whale watching, and he said of the southern resident whales, are there some whale watching companies that only focus on the southern resident?
Not that I'm aware of. The main rumor that all the whale watching companies want to put a stop to is that all whale watching is banned. And this is a rumor that's been circulating ever since the task force's recommendations came out last fall. that, oh, whale watching as a whole is banned in Washington. And this being one of the biggest tourist attractions, you know, sure. next to the Space Needle and Pike Place is whale watching. You've got people from all over the world thinking, oh, well, Washington is closed for whale watching. And that the Whale Watch Association members, the small business whale watchers say, no, that has been an extremely detrimental rumor that has already hurt their business.
Oh, really?
They are not closed for whale watching, just southern resident whale watching.
Well, and I know one of the criticisms was that the governor put together a huge task force about saving the whales, and these tour groups, they only had one member, and that was Ken Bascom, who's the founder of San Juan Island Center for Whale Research.
Political input, but the biological input was pretty minimal. It was not a technical expert meeting. It was a political meeting.
So their other complaint is that this is just, what, feel-good politics and not based on science?
Yeah, and Ken Balcom, he's not a whale watcher. He's a marine biologist. He founded
right.
the Center for Whale Research. And so here you have a scientist saying, no, this task force, this series of task force meetings was not scientific, it was political. And he and some of the whale watching businesses maintain that this is kind of the task force going for the low-hanging fruit. It's really easy to just blame the businesses and say, oh, well, it's the whale watching vessel noise that's doing all the harm, and so that's an easy fix. But really, it's a very multifaceted problem what's hurting the orcas, and they say that the task force really didn't go into enough depth looking at all of the different threats.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the sea lions, there's the tribes that put nets across the rivers that, you know, are hurting their food, all of that. And then, yeah, to blame the boats. And I know also from your story that the whale-watching tour groups, they say there are yachts out there and there are, you know, just pleasure boats, and they're not looking. They don't even know how to look for whales, and they can warn them. They can let them know, hey, stay away, there's a whale up ahead, because they want to protect the source of their business, too.
Yeah, and I mean, they love the whales. That's why they're in the business. They have a great fondness and deep love for the whales. And they say that they fulfill two very important roles when they're out there. The patrol role, which you just brought up. So alerting other commercial vessels, fishing vessels,
yeah.
pleasure craft. Hey, there are southern residents here. Stay away. Don't go over the top of them. And then the educational role as well. Everyone who comes aboard a whale watching vessel is educated in the plight of the southern residents and will hopefully be inspired to take action themselves. So, you know, if you take that away, it's kind of scary. You're
yeah.
taking away some of the southern residents' best allies.
And the point Nicole made just a moment ago, the businesses say that what Inslee said in his speech has been misinterpreted and they're not getting calls, and they said they're still open for business.
The public relations negative impact that's happened since this came out, it's significant. We're all seeing effects of people calling from all over the world. Washington's still open for whale watching. Sounds like you guys can't watch whales anymore.
Good work, Nicole.
Thank you. So support the whale watchers. You can still watch transient orcas. You can watch minke whales, humpbacks. Plenty still to watch.
Yeah, yeah. And we just wanted to make sure that this whole business community wasn't getting hurt because of a rumor that's out there. All right, great piece. You can see the whole thing up at mynorthwest.com. And as always, love to know what you think. You can text me. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.